You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, so most of you have made it through Thanksgiving, hopefully with not too many extra calories piled onto the pile. However, I guess it's really unique. I'm not sure that there are too many people having leftover turkey stuff with poke bowls and raw squid and all of the stuff that we show up on our Thanksgiving. But obviously a good Thanksgiving weekend. We hope you're enjoying it. Joining us today in our Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council segment is Dr. Mark Fitchett. And Mark is, among other things, an expert in pelagics. And that's some of the stuff we're going to talk about, because pelagic means what are you going to get? What's going to be on your table for the holidays? So we'll get into that and some more things. And taking a look at a recently done or a stock assessment that's coming up on Big Eye Tuna. Boy, it's a pretty big Pacific out there. First of all, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving, and Mark. And secondly, isn't it sort of human nature is sort of interesting. We have the biggest demand for tuna right now at this time of the year. And we have the fewest tuna at this time of the year. So isn't it funny how sometimes in the summertime when it's like everywhere, we just don't need enough. And then do we need to be retrained in some areas or what?
Maybe. I think it's also, you know, a product of just sort of the local culture here. We want to have fresh fish at the end of the year. Yeah. And as you know, sometimes catch rates towards the fourth quarter can be pretty variable. Fishing's been actually decent.
Pretty good recently.
It's been decent. Yeah. The longline fleet has been catching more and more Big Eye than in prior fourth quarters. We have an expectation of reaching our so we have a quota, and then we have attributions to the territories, and we're expected to actually catch that attribution 4 days faster, which means that we're catching a lot more fish here, which is a good thing.
Because the demand is up there for sure.
Demand's up, and there's, you know, been some good opportunity this year. We did have a slow lull early in the summer that had followed a period in time in which, you know, think they were offloading, you know, 70 to 80 metric tons a day. Which is a lot of fish, up to 100 metric tons.
You know,
tons.
It may not seem like that, but if you go down to the Pier 38 to the auction, that's a lot of fish.
It's a lot of fish. I mean, you're seeing marlin down to, you know, the price of marlin was down to like, you know, 10 cents a pound. It wasn't even worth the price of ice because you had so much volume in there. So it brings up some interesting management questions on, you know, on when to you know, pump the brakes on fishing because it may not be economically more viable. So we're looking. So that's an important thing too. But the other thing is maintaining a market supply of Big Eye tuna to Hawaii and to United States, and that's what we do here in Hawaii.
Interestingly enough, and many of you, I was so pleased to be a part of the celebration of life of Frank Goto from United Fishing Agency, and that came up by a couple of our politicians and others in the fishery that, you know, we are smarter, catching fish smarter, and also educating people to the fact that we are not just a dumping ground where people come in with their fresh fish and we fly it all over the world. I mean, you know, the majority of the fish that our longline fleet, for instance, catches, we eat. And, you know, I mean, a lot of it does, you know, goes to Japan, goes to the mainland, stored fish goes to the mainland, but mainly we're feeding ourselves.
Yeah, we are. And
biggest agricultural product we got.
Fish is the biggest agricultural product of Hawaii, and it's one of the most important living resources. So I also realize that Hawaii has, and a lot of folks even here in Hawaii who aren't really in tune with the fishing culture, who are more, you know, in tune with the beach and urban aspects, don't really understand that in the United States, Hawaii is one of the largest fishing ports, and it's also the largest tuna port in the United States. It is the largest tuna fishery here in Hawaii. We have up to 160 longline vessels, plus we have a very substantial small boat.
Mosquito fleet, we call them.
There's a lot of them out there. And they actually provide some of the freshest, best quality product, too. So the other thing is the quality of fish that come through here is some of the best in the world. And that's very unique. And there's a lot of economic incentive for us to maintain a healthy fishery and maintain a healthy supply to the market. And that can be difficult yeah. with when we're dealing with international quotas and dealing with some inequities in the playing field in the international playing field.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to try and parse out for you today. I asked Mark if he doesn't mind just sort of explaining the way these quotas work. For instance, I do know that every single year at this time of the year, people start asking the question, are we going to have enough fish? Are we going to have enough fish? Well, the answer most of the time is yes. And there's also some improvements made. Mark was telling me off the air that I thought, man, we better get these things on the air. And that, Mark, was basically that, you know, because we're fishing smarter and we sort of know where the fish is, that sometimes this gap that used to be between when things closed and we could replace them with other fish was sometimes like a week or 10 days where there's really no fish. And for what you're saying, we're buttoning that up a little bit better because we're being, what, more efficient?
Yeah, and we're optimizing the fishery too, and that's something that's really important. And it's maintaining supply of fish to the market that is commensurate to the demand and the fishing capacity. So there's a sweet spot. You know, you have demand in the market, and then you have the capacity of the fleet. You want to keep our fleet working. You want to keep them keep their jobs being viable. Plus, and then the 800-pound gorilla in the room is the conservation status of the stock. We don't want to be pushing too hard. And then you have bycatch issues that we're trying to mitigate as well. So this is
that's a lot of balls in the air to juggle,
multi-dimensional problem that we deal with, and it is very complex. And it's hard to explain, you know, in a to a layperson. But in order to do that, you need to explain why we have quotas for tuna, the basis of those. And then here in Hawaii, we have a very unique situation in which we have territorial agreements with U.S. territories.
And, you know, when you take all of these things together, it's like a deck of cards. You shuffle and shuffle and shuffle. But what is interesting to me is you've heard about these quotas, but you've also heard of stock assessment. So even if you have a quota, if there's no fish in the area where you have your quota, what's the point? So aren't we, isn't this whole, I was mentioning in the opening part of the segment, that one of the things we want to talk about is stock assessment. Not only how they're done, but how they play into these things called quotas. We have to know how many fish are in an area, and then we have to decide what you can sustainably fish out of there without decimating the population.
Right. And so I'm going to explain sort of the tiered system here. We run a stock assessment, and I'll get to the details on that. Stock assessment uses catch rates and catch by region. It looks at size composition data. And what happens is the scientists will run sophisticated computer models and then determine where is the biomass level relative to a limit reference point or how sustainable is the fishery. And then on top of that, they're also looking at the second issue, which is what is the rate of exploitation? Is the exploitation rate, is it commensurate with it being sustainable, or is it too high? Mm-hmm. And then you make management decisions based on that.
One thing, though, to make a management decision based on data, based on accumulation of, you know, evidence, stock assessments, anecdotal stuff, local stuff, international stuff, it's no quick fix.
No, it's no quick fix, and especially in the case of Big Eye Tuna, which you have two fisheries, or mainly, actually, there's more than two, but there's two big ones. You have the Purse Seine fleet, which is targeting skipjack tuna, and they do harvest almost an equal number of Big Eye Tuna and biomass as a longline fleet. However, they're harvesting juveniles.
Yeah,
so
and that
nominally,
means that they
they're
can't
harvesting
grow up.
Many more.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So you have that issue with the Purse Seine fleet. And the Purse Seine fleet, let me just tell you, the Purse Seine fleet is worth, you know, $4 to $5 billion a year in the Western Central Pacific. That's where all your canned tuna comes from.
Where are those boats fishing?
They're fishing more in the equatorial region between 10 degrees south to 10 degrees north. They fish around they offload and fish around around Kiribati, the Marshalls, all the way down to within the Pacific Island regions, within the sovereign waters of some of those Pacific Island nations in the equatorial region, and then a lot of them offload product in Pongo Pongo.
Now, when they do that, is this fresh or frozen?
The majority of it is frozen and it's canned.
Yeah.
So it's canned and frozen fish. So the Big Eye Tuna is mixed in that catch.
Mm-hmm. Which a lot of us here think, what do you mean? Please, don't freeze a Big Eye.
Yeah.
Don't freeze an ahi. Well, in actual fact, aren't they working on that very thing right now? In other words, It's a shame to have to lose this quality fresh fish with the oil that we want for the sashimi and the poke.
Yeah.
But the purse seiners, that's not their fish. That's not what they care about. They care about tonnage and canning.
And canned tuna and skipjack tuna, for the listener to understand, is that although they're harvesting, you know, an order of magnitude more skipjack than a lot of the other tropical tuna, skipjack tuna are extremely prolific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are very, very productive. On the flip side, you have two other tuna species who are also very productive, who are being caught when they're smaller size, mm-hmm. right? So that's the purse seine fishery. The longline fishery targets some juveniles, but mainly adults. So you have a different size class. Mm-hmm. So you have equal. You're looking at the graphs, and you see equal amount of biomass for the This is based on current baseline harvest levels of big eye tuna, longline, and purse seine, but mm-hmm. nominally the number of fish, juvenile fish, being taken in the purse seine, and then also in the ring net, surround net fisheries in Indonesia and Philippines, are just astronomically higher.
You know, I got to tell you something.
And that brings a lot of conservation issues.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you to expand on that, but also tell you that there are many, many out there listening to the program that remember when we had a very viable skipjack business going on here. We had a lot of aku boats. We had a lot of fish. The only thing that people didn't get is that, well, you're saying they're the most prolific. They multiply like rabbits, you know?
Yeah.
But the problem is they don't last long. I mean, you catch a skipjack. If you're not going to freeze it, you better get quick because that thing starts breaking down in, what, a day or two?
Yeah, about 48 hours. Yeah. It's, you know, Aloha Poke Shop right there on Bishop Street is my favorite place. I'm going to give a shout out to them. They're right across from our offices. They have aku every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite fish.
Yeah.
It's that beet red. I love it. It's delicious. And it's only going to last about 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that's why most of that fish, when it's caught, is, you know, in the purse seine fleet, because the amount of volume they're catching
is frozen. Yeah, now, but I know this question comes up a lot. We know what otaru is an aku or skipjack over 20 pounds. And that, obviously, if you're a fisherman, you want to see those otaru. You want to see those 20, 30, 40 pounders, right?
Yeah.
40 pounds is about the record for local waters, right? But in fact, before the last of our aku boats went by their way, they were catching a lot smaller fish.
Yeah, and it's also worth mentioning is those fish, those otaru in the aku, they're smaller even when they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
But the size of an adult aku and otaru of skipjack tuna is going to be a sub-adult
mm-hmm.
big eye tuna. And these fish school based on the size, right? So
yeah, isn't that fascinating? You're a scientist. I mean,
yeah.
I can't tell you the few times in my life where I've been able to actually see that when you're motoring through a huge, you know, school of fish, and they're all the same size.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And so the reason the purse seine fleet right now is catching a lot more big eye mixed with skipjack is that because the big eye also have an affinity to fads,
mm-hmm.
and there's more biomass under these drifting
food.
Fads. And so fads are fish aggregating devices. So in the Pacific, the purse seiners are putting their sets on floating objects
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of fish that hang around these floating objects. And so a management measure is controlling the number of days that the purse seine fleet can fish on these fads in certain areas, and that is to mitigate the mixture and to reduce the mixture of big eye tuna in there.
Okay, there's one other thing that's kind of interesting. We have our fads in Hawaii. They're not the same kind of fads that you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, what you're talking about here is when you go by Tibui, you know, and there's an ahi there or a mai-mai, or you catch it, and you troll around a few more times, catch a few, then there are no more. These fads that you're talking about, first of all, they're way bigger. And there's stuff underneath them.
They can be pretty small.
Yeah.
Like, they can be, you know, a trash can lid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can be pretty small.
Yeah.
And so the WCPFC, which is the Western Central Pacific Fisheries Commission, has rules on what is considered a fad versus just floating trash.
It's kind of interesting how many people are deploying these things, isn't it?
There's a lot of it. Yeah. And down in Central America, mm-hmm. it was an issue with the drifting fads because it was keeping some of these tunas closer to shore interrupting some of their migratory routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interestingly enough, too, is they're proprietary. So people think, that's mine.
Yeah,
you can't fish there.
Ownership rights of a public resource is a very touchy subject. Yeah, I don't want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
But by the same token, gang, you can imagine that if you decided to deploy your own food chain, whether it's a floating fad or what, I know that a lot of people, and I'm one of them, are fishing, you know, semi-commercially. that you have a marker or a beacon that you can deploy when you get in an area where there's fish or object. If you stick your marker on it, you can go back tomorrow. And a lot of people are doing that now because it's a food chain.
Yep.
What is the thing, you know, scientifically, how does that work? Little comes, bigger comes. It's a food chain, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty intuitive. Mm. You bring small fish come, they're going to hang out, and if there's a dearth of small fish, you're not going to get as many big fish that are going to follow. So you need to have, there's a lot of studies being going, especially right now, on fads and their effect on the ecosystem and food chain, on what level of predators and prey are entering and moving through. Mm. So.
Yeah. To me, it's really fascinating. But and a lot of guys that have their buoys off the windward side or on some of the neighbor islands, it really is fascinating as a fisherman to find out that, you know what, this is, you can actually farm. This is a farm here. It's a vertical farm. And if you put enough of them out there, you can have a big vertical farm.
Yeah. But it's worth noting is that just because you're having more fads or, you know, fish aggregating devices or artificial reefs that we deploy, it's not necessarily creating more biomass.
Yeah, it's not increasing the population.
Yeah, people conflate that. They're like, oh, well, we're catching more fish, therefore, oh, well, there's more fish out there. It's not how it works. But the issue with fads, it keeps boats from having to fish further offshore, do less searching time and more efficiency. So there's some virtues there from a fishery standpoint. And the purse seine issue, it creates more of an opportunity to catch smaller big eye tuna, which is not good for the longline fleet that we have here, which is targeting the adults.
Yeah.
And so what happens is you have an increased fishing mortality of juveniles when you're catching a lot of these small big eye tuna on these drifting fads and also in the purse seine fleet. And what happens is that reduces the opportunity for fishing for adults later down the line.
That really is a good point. Because
spawning potential.
We've talked about this before, not only spawning potential that Dr. Fritz is talking about, but we're also talking about there's a resentment in the big eye and ahi fishermen here that want the big fish, that if you got guys out there taking all the juveniles, where are the big fish going to be? And that's where, once again, I think sort of dovetailing into our conversation, Mark, is what the SOC assessments are for and how they help in determine quotas.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we have these two fisheries, right? So I've explained the purse seine and the longline fishery. Right now, there is not a quota on big eye or a total allowable catch at the commission for big eye caught in the purse seine fishery. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
There's going to be. So we're actually pushing for that. Right now, the longline fishery has a quota system. That is because the fishery was determined to have been overfished prior to 2017. And so what happened was the commission in the decade prior had quotas set for a lot of the large distant water fisheries. And those fleets are, you know, the United States, which is Hawaii, and then, of course, Japan, Korea, Taiwan. You know, I think New Zealand, Australia may even have one that's very small. But of the main countries that have fisheries, the United States kind of got gypped in the deal. At the time, our fishery was big. We had, you know, 100 and some boats, but we didn't have the number of fishing days.
Mm-hmm.
And so the volume of fishing
once again,
brought out.
That's distance related, another thing,
yeah.
Right?
And so the commission did two things. They look at, all right, we have X amount of fish that we can harvest, so we're going to look at the aspirations of these fishing countries and then the precedent. You know, we've had some closures in the 90s and some closures prior of a longline fisheries here. So this idea was, but the commission internationally, they didn't think that we had the aspiration here to be expanding and realizing the potential fleet capacity of Hawaii. And on top of that,
we ever been at capacity? In my opinion,
we're just about there. And you know, the fleet can harvest 8,000 metric tons consistently a year, but based on precedence, the United States was given 3,500 metric tons, which is peanuts, which is compared to Japan, which doesn't even use its full quota of 17,000.
Wow.
And then China has One, I think China and Taiwan and Korea have upwards to about 10,000 metric tons, somewhere in that ballpark. And they trade with each other. Mm-hmm. There's some agreements. I think China bought 500 metric tons from Japan. I don't know what they got in return. Yeah. That's not here or there. But so the United States is stuck with a low quota. However, which interestingly enough, in the Western and Central Pacific, there's a group of island nations called the FFA, and then there's a subgroup of them, which is the Fishers Forum Agency.
Yep.
And then there's a group of other small island countries called PNA, which is the Parties of Nauru Agreement. So what these are, these consortium of fishing nations, they kind of band together politically to kind of, further their collective interests, which is a good and bad, which can mm-hmm. be a good and bad thing.
Well, they're certainly showing you what they believe to be theirs.
Yeah, and they believe in a lot of the sovereignty of the mm-hmm. waters, and they try to charge mm-hmm. other distant water fisheries to fish in there. But, the big thing as far as longline fisheries is that they don't have a quota for what's called small island developing states.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have and states that have not traditionally, that are not called SIDS, small island developing states in the Pacific, or participating territories like New Zealand and Australia, their quota is capped at 2,000 metric tons. They don't really catch a whole lot of big eye tuna, right?
You know what? Here, I know what Mark's going to come up with now. By the way, Dr. Mark Fitchett, he wears a lot of hats at the council, but the one that I like to put on the most is pelagics, because that's what I really relate to, and I get it. And there is something that tells me that some of these places that you're talking about, the number one asset in their bank is that quota.
It is. It is that fishery. Yeah, and so fisheries is a huge, for these small island developing states, it's a huge component of their national GDP. Like Marshall Islands, it's like massive.
Yeah, almost everything.
Kiribati. Yeah. I mean, you go to Marshall Islands and they got multi-million dollar fire trucks that were bought based on fishing agreements with Taiwan. Mm-hmm. The hospital was built by the Japanese. Their government building was built by the Chinese. And then plus they get a lot of money from the United States.
Now, here's what you have to understand. You've heard us on the program before with others talking about when we acquire these quotas and we pay for them, that it goes into wharfs and piers and ice machines and boat ramps and all of that. But Mark also said that this is at their discretion. So when he's talking about a hospital or a new roadway or a school, that's thanks to fish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple, isn't it?
And so the United States also gives a lot of money to some of these countries like Marshall Islands.
Well, CNMI, a lot of them.
Well, CNMI.
That's a little bit different.
So the FSM, the Federated States of Micronesia, the Marshall Islands, and Palau, which are former U.S. territories or former trust territories.
Now independent, by the way.
And they're now independent. Yeah. They get a chunk of money from, thanks to Uncle Sam, to keep the U.S. dollar in circulation, and it's a big part of the economy. It's aid that we give them, essentially. That is being negotiated right now. Pompeo is down. Mike Pompeo was just down in the islands this summer. So, but I digress. A lot of that money that could be going, that a lot of that these agreements, that are happening in some of these islands, that should also, in theory, and does in theory, include our three territories. We have Guam. We have CNMI, the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas, and American Samoa. And because they're considered under this, as I mentioned, Article 30 of the WCPFC, blah, 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 SIDS, the small island developing states.
Lots of vegetables and
so
acronyms.
So, so these U.S. territories are also not beholden to have a quota because they're considered small islands.
Mm-hmm.
So what, because the—
Well, wait. If you're listening and trying to figure out why that is, because they don't have a marketing plan. They don't have a distribution plan.
They
have a fishery.
Yeah.
So what they do is, if there's 5,000 people that need to eat fish, they catch enough fish for 5,000, that's it.
Yeah, and the fisheries are different. They don't have the fleet capacity or the capacity to build a longline fishery, in Guam and CNMI. They have a small one in America Samoa, as we mentioned at the show a few weeks ago, for albacore. And so Hawaii, which has which has a disproportionately low quota, is reliant on fishing agreements, which is no different than what other countries do with other SIDs, right? They go in and they fish within their waters. And so we are enjoying what is considered a transaction between the U.S. and the participating territory, mm-hmm. and having an allocation limit from these territories that, in theory and technically, do not have to even have a limit. So we are transferring an allocation mm-hmm. that is purchased by the fishery here in Hawaii from the three territories, if they so decide.
Somebody asked me that. Yeah, well, somebody asked me to say, next time you talk to Dr. Fitchett about that, ask him this. Let's say that I'm one of these little places, and I'm going to get so much of the quota I'm going to sell or sell to the long-line fleet from Hawaii. But wait a minute, some Chinese guys want to come in here. Some Portuguese guys want to come in here. I'll sell some to them too. Do any of them overmarket their catch? Overmarket their territory?
Or you mean like so? The U.S. territories don't do that.
No, they won't do that. They
but
can't.
Some of the other countries can't.
Yeah. Right?
So they can. Other countries, foreign countries, can do that. That they still have to because they're not a territory. They still have to report that catch under mm-hmm. the distant water fleet.
And by the way, from what I'm assuming is you don't just get paid a bunch of money from this guy to go fish. You get paid on the fish that he catches. In other words, it's not here's a million and we can't catch anything. We didn't catch anything, but okay, here's a million. We caught a quarter of a million. Here's what you get.
And that's in their case between the agreements between some of these other. I mean, it all varies between other sure. countries, but between the U.S. fishery here in Hawaii and there in our three territories, they are purchasing the opportunity to have an allocation.
I love that. Purchasing the opportunity.
They're purchasing an opportunity. Yeah. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to catch all of that allocation limit. You know, it could, and it has in some years, and it may this year because we have, you know, but it hasn't in the past always been that. So what happens is they put the money up front, and then they have the opportunity to fish here in Hawaii, and then attribute the catch being caught here in Hawaii to one of the territories.
Yeah, got it. And by the way, some of the do that, and what they do is they it's loaded in advance, and if they don't use it in that given period, they can extend the period. They rarely would get their money back.
Yeah.
You know, once you pay a country of money, they're going to build a hospital, a boat ramp, or airport, whatever. They're not going to give you your money back if you can't catch fish. I think, though, that maybe the audience would be best informed if you can explain the recent concern or the recent completion of stock assessments, how that happens and how these numbers play into all of these negotiations you're talking about.
Yeah, and so we had the first time that Big Eye Tuna has been considered you know, not overfished or experiencing overfishing was in 2017. And following that, there hasn't really been any relaxation of the quota system. The United States is saying, hey, we need a bigger quota. We shouldn't be reliant 100% on these territorial agreements mm-hmm. like we are for the third and fourth quarters of the year. It's unfair. The optics of it is not the best. I mean, it's kind of hard to kind of explain to a layperson here and the public how this works without them thinking there's something else going on. And so, you know, we have a new stock assessment coming up in August of this year. That's going to be in Apia, Western Samoa. Mm-hmm. They're going to be at the Science Committee meeting. We're looking forward to that. That stock assessment this go around is going to determine, you know, what is the stock status of Big Eye, as I mentioned further, is it overfished, is it experiencing overfishing? And then based on the commission on the management side, starting in 2020, we're going to start looking at a total allowable catch for both the purse seine. Mm-hmm. We're going to introduce then. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have an allocation of biomass to the purse seine fishery and then to the long line. And so that could be an opportunity to restructure these quotas and how things are allocated, not only by the fleet, by the purse seine fishery, which doesn't really have a cap, and the long line fishery. And then how do you divvy that up by flag?
Yeah.
And so that's one way that we're going to look at. So, but the stock assessment is extremely important because it will tell us the rate of exploitation by region, and we've seen here that where Hawaii is, the reduction in spawning potential is much, much, much lower than it is in other regions. We're not really fishing as hard as other regions are.
By the way, interestingly enough, there are several different categories that these stock assessments compute or find out about. They'll talk whether something is sustainable, whether it is exploited, whether it's threatened, or whether it's, you know, facing extinction. I mean, these assessments can be pretty brutal, can't they?
They can be. I mean, we've had some. We have some assessments right now that for striped marlin, for example, is not in happy times. Yeah. Blue marlin, we're concerned. There's a stock assessment for them coming up in 2021. It hasn't been overfished or experiencing overfishing. It's just been teetering around maximum sustainable yield, but we're concerned with catch rates and other fleets that stock assessment may put that into an overfished, and that's going to require management action. And so we're keeping our eye on that. If it is determined to be overfished, yellowfin tuna is of concern for the Western and Central. I mean, the listener here in Hawaii would be like, well, that's just bananas. We're catching a lot of ahi.
Right,
but
right.
But stock-wise, there's been concern, with issues I mentioned prior with the purse seine fleet harvesting a lot of small juveniles and fishing on fads. These management actions that maybe need to get done. And in the meantime, the stock may or may not, there's some concern of overfishing going on. That may happen too. We're waiting on to hear about that.
But the interesting thing to me still is, once again, if we go full circle here with Dr. Fitchett today, talking about what you can expect to have available, and whether how much it is a pound or not, we can't even talk about that too early. But what we're reasonably certain is, even though we're closing in on, and in some cases have reached capacity, reached quota, that we're going to be able to do these transactions, and it doesn't look like there's going to be in 2019 a absence of fish on the plate. It's going to be there. We don't know how much it's going to be, but we're going to have fish.
It's going to be tight this year because the catch rates are high and the supply coming in has been high. So we're concerned that we may reach our final attributions and kind of be cutting it close by the new year. So what we did this past year, the council, we took action on increasing those territorial allocations from 1,000 metric tons to 1,500.
Which is a 50% increase, which is, I think, fair at the moment.
And so that would also mean that maybe we only need two territorial agreements at a time rather than all three.
Gotcha.
And it makes things a little more flexible. And it also incentivizes more funding coming in through these territorial agreements to the territories.
Can it also save us travel time, effort, and expense of going to some place that may be further away by skipping over something that's right there in front of us?
Well, that's a good question. So so the listener knows, when we do these territorial agreements, the fishery can still fish anywhere in the WCPFC region.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not precluded to fish locally when we have these. We don't have to be fishing down south towards these territories because it's considered the same stock.
Interestingly enough, though, the fleet has its preferences, whether it be temperature, weather. It has a lot of preferences, and isn't it at the end of the day, it's the individual longline skipper that determines where that boat's going to go.
Yeah, there comes to their discretion. Yeah. Most of the fishing that we have right now, it moves either to the north of here, or they go fish south to get these large big eye. Yeah. And so they make these decisions based on oceanographic data, based on the size, composition, and quality of the fish that they hear being reported. We're implementing electronic reporting here now.
It's so exciting, gang.
Which is good.
As we go into it this coming year, we'll get together with Mark as often as we can, mainly to explain the moving parts, how they do the assessments, what kind of equipment. And the thing that really, really, really impresses me the most is some of these young people that are sitting at those computers that have never had sashimi, that have never gone fishing, that they've never even been in the water, that are giving us valuable information based on the data that they're supplied.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and I'm was been one of them. You have these data nerds who go out there with these models, but I can guarantee you that when they go to the science committee meetings, they are exposed to a lot of really good fish. So I guarantee you they're eating fish. You're right. I mean, there's a lot of many degrees of education that require this type of skills, and at the University of Miami under Nelson Earhart, who is my advisor, we learned a lot of these skills. But you need to be very good at understanding the nuts and bolts of how stock assessment and statistical models work, but also, like you said, there's a little bit of real life pragmatism that you need to know.
Okay, so here we are in the holidays, and we'll tell you next time where these stock assessments are going.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. And by the way, Mark Fitch is you're going down to New Zealand, so we're going to talk about that because hopefully you're going to eat some fish and have some good times down there. Thanks for joining us on the Thanksgiving Day weekend, Mark. We'll see you again soon.
Cheers.
Okay, and for those of you that want to hear something on the show, it's easy breezy, easy peasy. All right? TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. And don't forget, catch my column this month in Hawaii Boats and Yachts. Bunch of really great Christmas ideas from our friends at POP. Lots of great discounts. And don't forget to go, and if you want to get somebody some really neat presents, go to the WPCouncil.org website. WPCouncil.org website and see some of the materials that you can get right here in the holidays. Pretty cool. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Aloha.